Today's program is sponsored by SunsetLakeCBD.com. They're a farm that is located outside of Burlington, Vermont. They supply dairy to Ben & Jerry's ice cream. And in 2018, they decided that they were going to diversify. They started to grow hemp. Their hemp is 100% pesticide free. They only use organic fertilizers. You can go to their website at CBD.com and see just how their third-party test results for all of their products. And they're working with the University of Vermont on regenerative farming practices. On top of all that, their business practices are exceptional. $15 minimum wage. The employees own the majority of the company. And their product is awesome. They have Farmer's Roast CBD coffee. They have topical salves, which I have given now to multiple people. For me personally, I'm not saying it's going to work for you, but for me personally, it has been very helpful with my eczema. And I have given it to people who've told me it's been good on their back pain. We've gotten emails from people saying it's good for their arthritis. It has arnica and beeswax, as well as CBD. Also, gummy bears, tinctures, and smokables. You don't like that feeling of getting high and feeling paranoid, but you want that body relaxation? Boom, there you have it. Matt, give your smokable quick endorsement as a CBD skeptic and now a converted CBD smoker. I mean, you use it as supplement to other things you smoke.
Right. And the smalls are perfect for that because they're nice little nuggets already sort of stripped from the stems. They can just slip right in your grinder.
It's incredible. I mean, the stuff, I mean, it looks like it's pot, but it's not. It doesn't have the THC's part. Head to sunsetlakecbd.com. Use the coupon code Left Is Best. Fans of the show, that's what they wanted their coupon code to be. And I was psyched. One word, Left Is Best, 20% off. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. On with the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Mark Stern, staff writer at Slate on Courts and the Law, on the Amy Coney Barrett hearings, which are currently underway. I think at the moment, they may be on break. Meanwhile, Donald Trump in Florida, he's feeling powerful. He wants to kiss people. He's also dropping further in the polls. Another day and more panic amongst the Republican House prospects. Meanwhile, the California Republicans admit they're the ones who installed fake official ballot boxes around the state. Donald Trump pours money to the farmers he's harmed over the past 4 years in the election run-up. A federal court allows Governor Abbott to limit the Texas ballot drop boxes across the state. But meanwhile, in Georgia, early in-person voting explodes. And meanwhile, in Wisconsin, one half of the Wisconsin requested absentee ballots have already been returned. One half. 1.3 requested, over 600,000, 680,000 returned. That's as of yesterday. And meanwhile, the last day of Virginia voter registration shuts down early. Why? Because of a supposedly accidental fiber cable cut. Meanwhile, Johnson & Johnson's corona vaccine study is paused because of a problem with some of the subjects. And no one likes Tom Tillis. Cal Cunningham's lead grows in North Carolina despite a supposed texting scandal. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. We've got a lot to get to. Hearings have been ongoing in this morning. This is day two of the Amy Coney Barrett hearings, Senate Judiciary hearings. Donald Trump obviously wants this, wants to seat another conservative on the court prior to the election in the event that there's any type of Supreme Court case involving this election. Mitch McConnell obviously wants to seat this Supreme Court justice so that he can cement his legacy of having ushered in significantly over, I think, 215 approximately federal judges, three Supreme Court justices, including one seat that was kept open that may have, in many respects, made it very possible for Donald Trump to win in 2016. Certainly leaving a seat open, leaving the Supreme Court with only eight justices for a year, orchestrated the tilting of the court to a 6-3 conservative majority. It's not happened yet. It's likely to happen. Today on the program, we'll have Mark Stern here to discuss his perspective on how the Democrats are doing and what they should do. But I got to tell you, I've not been terribly impressed, to be frank. I don't think that they're going to hurt themselves in any way. And that seems to be the only Democratic strategy. Do not do anything that will help us or harm us. Do nothing. Be there and do nothing. And that seems to be the plan. It is depressing. It is a failed look. Even in losses, there's an opportunity. Sometimes, and particularly in losses, there's an opportunity. We will talk to Mark Stern about what he thinks the Democrats should be doing, what I think they should be doing. Just got an IM that we generally only take this. We generally only take these during the second hour of the show. But this is a good question. Sam, do you think if you had a normal job outside of politics and commentary that you would be more depressed about the state of things or less? I imagine that the more you dive into how messed up things are, the worse you may feel. But hopefully the fact that you have to be on camera every day might give you incentive to keep yourself off the ledge. It is both those things. I can only imagine what I would be doing now if I wasn't doing this show on a daily basis and hadn't been for nearly 10 years. Our 10-year anniversary is going to be on Election Day. We've got some special coverage planned, obviously, for the election, but also to celebrate our 10-year anniversary. It is true. I think it makes me a little bit more depressed to read into all of these things. Same time, I'm not convinced I wouldn't be doing it otherwise. And at that point, I'd be yelling at my TV and having absolutely no feedback. And therefore, I think I would probably be a little more depressed about it. I don't know. Meanwhile, we're on the cusp of a second wave of COVID that seems to be building across the country, particularly in the Northeast, as the weather turns cold. There's only so much that, we can do when we have a significant part of the population that just feels like it's not that serious. I don't need to wear a mask, whatever. Let's just look in on, Donald Trump, who was down in Florida. I guess this was this yesterday? Monday. Yes. And, here he is. He wants to kiss people. Do we have that clip?
Yes.
All right, let's play the clip where Donald Trump is talking about how strong he is and how much he wants to kiss people. Maybe we don't have that clip. Do we not have it? Brendan? All right, it appears we don't have that clip.
But if you want to get out there, get out. One thing with me, the nice part, I went through it. Now they say I'm immune. I feel so powerful. I'll walk into that audience. I'll walk in there. I'll kiss everyone in that audience. I'll kiss the guys and the beautiful women and everybody. I'll just give you a big fat kiss. No, but there is something nice. I don't have to be locked up in my basement, and I wouldn't allow that to happen anyway. I wouldn't allow it to happen.
There he is, Donald Trump, really feeling his oats. And then he goes on to say that he is going to, well, of course, I mean, this is, I guess, the 2016 or 2020 version of lock her up at this point. I mean, this may be very damaging to both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's ability to win in this 2020 election.
In legally sworn in administration, we were sworn in. They tried before the fact. They tried after the fact. We were an administration. And, you know, then they say, we want to know if you will agree with a friendly transfer of power. For 4 years, they've been trying to get us out of office. 4 years they've been trying to get us out. But we'll take care of it all after the election. We caught them cold. We caught them cold. Bad people. Crooked Hillary. And by the way, Obama and Biden knew everything that was happening, okay? Just in case you had any questions. We'll take care of it after the election. Joe Biden and the Democrat Socialists, but that gives you another reason to go out and vote. We got to get in. Because we don't, they'll just sweep it under the rug.
You need more reasons?
Joe Biden and the Democrat Socialists will kill your jobs, dismantle your police departments, dissolve your borders, you know that, release criminal aliens, confiscate your guns, no more Second Amendment, get used to it, destroy your suburbs, and drive God from the public square. That's what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I guess that's an upgrade. Wasn't Joe Biden at one point going to kill God?
Yes.
Didn't Donald Trump say he was going to kill God at one point or something to that effect?
Yeah, I think that's what he said.
There's Donald Trump seeming exceedingly energetic. I mean, good for him. A lot of energy, almost artificially energetic. That's the way I would describe that, the energy that I'm getting from him.
He seems pumped up.
He's pumped up. Yeah, definitely pumped up.
I'm the spirit of the Lord.
Yeah, I just, for whatever reason, it reminds me of some of the folks I remember from my college days. Not sure why.
Got a big test coming.
Yeah, I got a big test coming.
The rhetorical skills.
Anyways, folks, as you know, we're getting into the holiday season. More people are going to be mailing stuff, which means a busy post office. There's reasons. These days, you may not want to go out and get into crowded areas. Luckily, stamps.com brings the post office and now UPS shipping right to your computer. So you can mail or ship anything from the convenience of your home or your or any size office for that matter. Doesn't matter. You can use your computer to print official postage. You ready for this? Just between 9 to 5. No. 24/7 at any time of the day. You wake up in the morning. The other day, I emailed Brendan 4:30 a.m. to about a guest request. He writes me back at 4:35 in the morning. I'm like, what are you doing up? What am I doing up? If I had wanted to mail something, I could have gone and printed out some postage on stamps.com. Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail and up to 62% off UPS shipping rates. So you don't have to spend a minute of your holiday season at the post office this year or the UPS office. Sign up for stamps.com instead. There's no risk. With my promo code Majority Report, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. There's no long-term commitments. There's no contract. You just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Majority Report. That's stamps.com. Enter Majority Report. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Meanwhile, and this is one, this is not a product that I have personally used. However, we have had our official bra tester on the program test these out. As you know, Third Love has the perfect fit promise. Third Love bra, every Third Love bra is made with signature memory foam cups. They have no slip straps and a scratch-free band. There are bras in over 80 sizes. And here's the thing. If you're not sure about your size, Third Love's Fit Finder quiz will help you find the size and styles that are right for you. You just answer a few couple simple questions and you find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Did you know that breast shape matters when finding a good fit? I did not know this, but apparently some folks do. Third Love helps you identify your breast size and shape, and then it finds the styles that fit your body. In fact, I will tell you this, that our one of the things that our bra tester said, the idea that I had 60 days to try out the bras drew me in, but in the end, I don't think I've ever had a better experience buying clothing online, certainly not when it comes to bras. The Fit Finder worked perfectly, like a charm. The choice of styles, amazing. Both the bras I ordered were the perfect fit. They are incredibly comfortable and cute and subtle. And I want to hit the perfect fit because that never, ever happens when I order bras online. So now you can find your new favorite bra with high quality, comfy style starting at just $45, from modern stripes to lace that actually feels soft to their number one rated 24/7 classic t-shirt bra. And remember, Third Love's perfect fit promise means if you don't love it, every customer has 60 days to return, and returns and exchanges are free and easy. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 10% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/majority. Do it right now, and you'll find your perfect fitting bra. Get 10% off your first purchase. That's Third Love, spelled out T-H-I-R-D, love, .com/majority for 10% off today. And lastly, want to introduce the latest in butt cleaning technology, as it were, water. This has been a bit of a revelation to me. I was always a skeptic, but it's hard to believe that when we go to the bathroom in this country, most of us wipe instead of wash. For years, bidets have been available, but hideously expensive, costing thousands of dollars. The Hello Tushy modern bidet attachment is here to democratize the blessings bestowed by bidets and offering clean buttholes, if you will, to everyone. Hello Tushy cleans your butt with a precise stream of fresh water for just $79. And that's not per, visit. Just $79 one time. It attaches right to your existing toilet. It just all you got to do, unscrew the lid, slide it on, boom, screw it back up. You don't even need any tools. You can do it with your fingers. It requires no electricity, no additional plumbing. It cuts toilet paper use by 80%. So the Hello Tushy bidet pays for itself in a few months. And in the event that you ever have, I mean, who could ever imagine some type of run on toilet paper? But more than that, Hello Tushy, because you don't wipe at all, gives you a hands-free pooping experience, as it were. And every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. Join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. I got to say, folks, I was skeptical, but Kyle told me at the beginning of COVID, he said he got a high priced bidet. And I was like, I am not making that kind of investment. And he's like, I'll tell you, the bidet is great. And I have nothing to compare it to, but it has been fantastic. And I wish I could take it with me, frankly, wherever I go. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority. Get 10% off. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/majority. All right. Just a very quick break, and then we'll be back with Mark Stern. I'd like to welcome back to the program, Mark Joseph Stern. Mark, welcome. He is the staff writer from Slate on courts and the law. And I imagine you have been following the Amy Coney Barrett hearing this morning. I think they're on break right at the moment for lunch. And I appreciate your joining us. Okay. Let's start, I guess, just with a review of what the Democrats are doing, and then we'll talk about the stakes that are involved here. What did you think about day one? And frankly, maybe we can start even at this point. What do you think about them showing up at all?
Well, I had really debated with my colleagues about whether they should show up, because we all know this is an illegitimate confirmation process. These hearings should be treated as illegitimate. This entire thing is outrageously hypocritical and just a brazen partisan power grab. So the question is why Democrats even show up. And I think the answer is they only show up if they've really got something to contribute. If they're not just going to legitimize the hearings, but actually help the American people understand why this nominee is so incredibly dangerous, why Amy Coney Barrett is going to fundamentally overhaul the law, overturn decades of progressive precedent, and really kind of stymie the progressive political project from day one of Biden's presidency if he wins. I haven't seen Democrats doing that. I haven't seen them doing much of anything at all. I've seen them creating a lot of footage for their reelection ads. They've talked a lot about the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, that must poll well among voters. But I don't know that everybody understands the connection between Barrett's confirmation and the ACA. I don't think Democrats have spelled it out very clearly. And at this stage, I'm starting to think, hey, maybe they actually shouldn't have showed up, because this whole thing is a disaster.
All right. So I was wondering how big of an argument we were going to get in about this at the top. From my perspective, and then I want to go through and do what the Democrats should have been doing, because when I look at this stuff, I see a failure on behalf of Democrats, but I see a failure on behalf of leftists, broadly speaking. I feel like I'm a failure. Because of, I've been doing this now for 15, 16 years, and there is no awareness of the implications of what's about to happen. And that is depressing to me. But I'm going to move past that. Let's just have a little bit. I mean, here's my argument as to why they shouldn't have gone in the first place. You got Amy Klobuchar saying this is a sham on day one, right? And they're all saying some iteration of that. I'm sorry. If it's a sham, you don't participate. As soon as you participate, your whole argument that it's a sham goes out the window, because how is it a sham? You're there. You're doing what you're doing. Like, the bucket's there. You're just filling it with a slightly different liquid. And every time it's with a different liquid. The bottom line is they should have never showed up. I can imagine in some alternate universe, perhaps there is a genius orator who's going to explain to the American public and blah, blah, blah. But they could have done that on the steps of the Senate. And they could have said, this is a sham. If you sent in Merrick Garland right now, we would not be holding this hearing. You could send in Pam Carlin for all we care. We would not hold this hearing, because this is a sham. You either make it an argument that the process is a sham or you don't. And if you don't, then what do you bring into the party? Like you say, nothing, nothing, nothing. I tried to watch Dianne Feinstein and Leahy this today. And I'll tell you something, like, I'm really interested in this stuff. And I was just like, what? Like, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
So, Sam, you are not a failure. Don't let anyone tell you that you're a failure, okay? You're a great American success story, sweetie. Don't worry.
I appreciate that.
Look, it's the Democratic Party that's failed. We all know this. The Democratic Party has not explained to their base why courts matter in a way that is coherent and persuasive. The Republican Party has. Why? Because the Republican Party has Roe v. Wade, right? Yep. An entire conservative movement has really based itself on the drive to overturn Roe versus Wade, okay? There are millions of people who have grown up thinking that babies are being murdered every year because of the Supreme Court, and that their entire lives are devoted to changing that by changing the court and overruling Roe. There's no equivalence on the left. There's no single case that the left can rally around and rally the troops around and get them excited to defend at the court. Yes, there's Obergefell. Yes, there's the remnants of Roe, but it's not the same. There's not the same urgency. And so I just don't know. Like, you're convincing me. You're bringing me over to your side, because looking back, I don't know why I expected Pat Leahy to ask good questions at this hearing. Pat Leahy has never asked good questions at one of these hearings. I don't know why he's on this committee. We may recall that he was the one who honored Republicans' blue slips under Obama. He is one of the main reasons why Mitch McConnell held open like 100 seats for Donald Trump, right? These people do not understand the urgency themselves. How are they going to make voters see it?
I think that's absolutely right. I think there's a failure on their part. Frankly, I would like to put all non-attorneys on that committee, because their experience as prosecutors is not effective, and they are beholden to this notion that this is an avocation, that the law is something that, frankly, it is not. It may have been at one time, but it is not that now. And certainly it is not in the context of that Judiciary Committee. I would also argue, though, and I think you're right, there is nothing that animates the left in the way that Roe v. Wade animates the right. And they have nurtured that, but I also think that there's that is just the nature of the beast. However, the Voting Rights Act was a monumental achievement in this country that ended 80 years of suppression of Black people's ability to vote in this country. And the Supreme Court has begun to unwind it. They unwound it in 2013. And there was a lot of celebration about the Voting Rights Act. I remember John Lewis going across the bridge, a couple of years ago. There was no tie-in to that notion that the reason why we are, every day now I have a different story of voter suppression in these states. And 95% of the reason why those even exist, those stories even exist, is because of what they did to the Voting Rights Act. And where is anybody sort of making that connection? Because they're going to do it again. And they're going to attack what remains of the Voting Rights Act. They're going to do it again. And so let's pivot to talking about that very question. What are we going to get? And we can start with Obergefell, because you pointed out the other day on Twitter a dissent that took place in a case that I think it was Thomas and Alito signed on to, in a case that they were looking at. I couldn't find the whole thing because you didn't put a link on it. But you clipped it. But I read it. I was waiting to talk to you about it. So let's start there. Tell us about Obergefell and why, how Amy Coney Barrett is going to implicate that.
Right. So Obergefell is the 2015 Supreme Court decision that legalized same-sex marriage in every state, right? It is the reason why marriage equality is the law of the land now. It was a 5-4 decision. It was a very contentious split, right? Justice Anthony Kennedy, who wrote the majority opinion, has since retired. He's been replaced by Justice Brett Kavanaugh. If Justice Ginsburg is replaced by Barrett, then Obergefell will be in serious jeopardy. And we've already seen Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito say, hey, we're really eager to roll back marriage equality, if not overturn it altogether. And they decided to make this proclamation when looking at Kim Davis's case. So do you remember Kim Davis? She is the Kentucky
Secretary
clerk
of State, or she was the secretary of a county, right? I guess. In Kentucky, who refused to honor marriage certificates, right?
Yeah.
Sex couples.
Yeah. She refused to do her job. Her job as a county clerk was to issue marriage licenses. That's like that's the bulk of your job when you are the county clerk of Rowan County, Kentucky. Anyway, she refused to give them to same-sex couples, right? She was successfully sued. And Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito just last week highlighted her case and said she is a victim of Obergefell. This woman is a victim of marriage equality, and she was wrongly deemed a bigot by the state and by the courts for refusing to issue this marriage license when she was just following her Christian faith. And then they said, and this was the really alarming part, this court has an obligation to address the ruinous consequences of Obergefell, and only this court is in a position to fix the problem. What does that mean? Very clearly, I think it means that these two justices think the court has to overturn Obergefell, or at least roll it way back, in order to protect people like Kim Davis from basically being called bigots on Twitter. And this is a pretty alarming thing.
Okay, so what does roll it back mean? Because people should understand, it is all going to be foundationed on this notion of religious freedom.
Right.
That you are almost definitionally not a bigot if it is your religion, and it ultimately can be like, well, what if it's just my moral code? Right. And people, I hope, their wheels are starting to turn here as to what can fall in that instance. But go.
So two ways that the court can, and I fear will, roll back marriage equality. The first is what you just mentioned, saying that religious freedom overrides the right to marry and the right to be treated equally. And we're actually about to see a case about this. The Supreme Court will hear a case in November that asks whether Philadelphia is constitutionally obligated to provide taxpayer money to a Catholic foster care agency that refuses to work with same-sex couples. Okay, think about that for a second. The people in this case, the plaintiffs, are asking the Supreme Court to rule that cities and states are obligated to funnel taxpayer dollars to foster agencies that turn away same-sex couples, agencies that make it harder for foster children to find loving homes and loving parents because of their own bigotry and discrimination, right? That is an example of the kind of case that can roll back marriage equality. That's a little indirect. More directly, you could have a decision that allows people like Kim Davis to refuse to provide a marriage license, that forces same-sex couples to go out of the county or even out of the state to get a license, right? You could have a state that refuses to provide health insurance to the partners of same-sex couples or their children because they're deemed less worthy. This was something that a Texas Supreme Court justice argued for after Obergefell, that the children of same-sex couples deserve fewer constitutional rights because they aren't their biological offspring. That leads me to the second way that marriage equality can be rolled back. There is a case on the Supreme Court's doorstep right now in which Indiana is asking for the ability to refuse to place same-sex parents on their child's birth certificate. Now, look, it's 2020. Birth certificates are not about genetics. If a straight couple adopts a child or conceives via artificial insemination, they are both placed as parents on their birth certificate. All same-sex couples are asking for is the same rights, the same privilege that they're put on their kid's birth certificate, because that's how you establish legal parenthood. And Indiana is fighting that. And it is asking the Supreme Court to let them force same-sex couples to adopt their own children rather than be acknowledged as their actual parents. And this is very disturbing. The Supreme Court has not yet turned away that case. It actually asked the couple in the case to respond to Indiana's arguments, a very unusual move, which suggests that the court may take up this case in the coming months. So there is an onslaught from the lower courts and from red states seeking to pull back the rights of same-sex couples. And this is something I think Amy Coney Barrett is very eager to hop onto.
Let me ask you this, just so that we can sort of demonstrate the implications of this. The right of same-sex couples to marry is established, but this Catholic foster agency says, okay, but my religion says I'm not going to recognize their marriage, therefore I don't have to provide them services, right? I don't have to make them the cake or place foster children there. I get, and I'm now the Catholic Church, speaking again, or let's say some other church, Yeah, I know. I get that you can have two races marry, but it is against my religion. In fact, when my dad went to Bob Jones University, they wouldn't allow multiracial dating there because that was no good. And so we don't want to provide foster care children to mixed race couples. How is that any way different?
It is not. You and I know that. But if you think that gay people are sexual deviants who don't deserve equal rights, then you view it differently. And we know that several Supreme Court justices believe that. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett used a phrase today that raised a lot of eyebrows, sexual preference, right?
Let's play a clip of her doing that. I was going to bring that up. Here's a clip of her doing this over and over again. This is a 47-year-old woman, incidentally. This is not someone who has been theoretically in a different, universe. Right. Play this clip, Brendan.
I have never discriminated on the basis of sexual preference and would not ever discriminate on the basis of sexual preference.
Now, what's the implications of saying sexual preference as opposed to what has been the terminology that has been used widely for decades, sexual orientation?
Well, I think it's obvious. Preference suggests that it's something you can choose, that you may prefer to date people of the same sex, and that if you really apply yourself, you could change that preference, right? This is the foundation of anti-gay conversion therapy, that sexuality, what people are attracted to people of the same sex, that's deviance, that's an aberration, and it's something that they can change and fix. That is the connotation of sexual preference. That is why we do not use it anymore, because it is insulting and offensive. It's like saying the gay lifestyle or avowed homosexual, right? Those are once common terms, but they all suggested that homosexuality is something you choose, something that you dabble in or decide to go, you know, you jump into it. You're like, okay, today I'm a homosexual. The homosexual agenda is all mine. That is bigotry. That is extremely offensive. It's the kind of language that Justice Antonin Scalia used. He refused to use the word sexual orientation in any opinion ever. He put the phrase orientation in scare quotes in his opinions. Instead, he preferred same-sex or homosexual conduct. And that gets to the question you asked before. The reason why these individuals think that homosexuality is different from race is because they acknowledge that race is fundamental. They acknowledge that race is a sort of set trait, but they don't think the same thing about sexuality. They think that homosexuality is a preference and a choice and something that can be changed, that it's just about conduct, not identity, and thus that it doesn't deserve the same constitutional protections.
Okay, so let's move on from that. That fight is, they're mentioning I call it Obergefell because I don't know how to pronounce things. But just days ago, let's talk about. We can talk about the Chevron deference, which is going to be one that, you know, I think for a lot of folks who are voting for Biden, and maybe doing so without a lack of enthusiasm, it is because they feel that there is a whole host of issues that are incredibly urgent and dire. One of them is things like global warming, among other things, of course, but global warming is one where, you know, we feel like the clock is ticking. There is a host of things that an EPA who has been tasked with dealing with global warming. I mean, you could just say right now Congress could pass a bill and say to the EPA, deal with global warming, because they don't necessarily know the multitude of different things that are contributing to it as a Congress. We're not going to list every single thing, because if we leave one off the list, EPA is full of scientists. They may find one, right? That's where Chevron deference comes in. Will you explain that concept and then explain how these guys are going to attack it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really two different issues here, all wrapped in one. Chevron deference basically means that the federal judiciary should defer to an agency's reasonable interpretation of federal law. So like you said, Congress doesn't pass an air quality bill and specify down to the micrometer or whatever exactly how many, you know, milliliters of mercury can go in the water, right? They say, look, mercury is a problem. Carbon is a problem, whatever. EPA, you need to figure out how to limit it and how much we can safely have in this country, right? So Chevron deference is what allows the courts to uphold those regulations. So Chevron deference tells the courts, look, Congress told the EPA to limit mercury. Well, EPA said we need to limit mercury by doing X, Y, and Z. That seems like a pretty reasonable way to deal with this problem. We're going to uphold it. You take away Chevron deference, you turn those judges into a scientific review board. It means that those judges have to carefully analyze and scrutinize the scientific determinations that the EPA has made in order to limit pollutants. And judges are really bad at that. They aren't scientists. And that is why the second issue that is very similar alarms me, maybe even more, something called the non-delegation doctrine. Okay, it sounds like it was designed to put you to sleep. But this is an idea that has been endorsed by the five conservatives who are already on the court, that Congress can't even tell the EPA to regulate mercury or carbon in the first place, that Congress has to be the one to do all of the heavy lifting, that Congress cannot entrust the scientists to figure out how to keep us safe, but has to do it itself. And Congress cannot do that. So this is really a kind of judicial recipe for eradicating and abolishing all of the environmental regulations that we live under today.
All right. So be a little more specific with the non-delegation clause. So yeah. For instance, let's say Congress says it is our will that we have clean water. And by clean water, we mean water that if human beings drink it, if children drink it, who may be more sensitive to toxins, they drink it, that they're not going to have a disease or any type of neurological dysfunction. It's just going to be healthy. That's what the Congress wants to do. How does the non-delegation idea impact that?
So what the conservatives would say is that the power of the federal government is split between the branches. Schoolhouse rock stuff, right? Congress legislates and creates the law, and the executive branch enforces it. What they argue is that when Congress tells the EPA, okay, you need to figure out how to give us clean air, it is transferring or delegating its legislative powers to another branch of government. Because the EPA, like almost all of these agencies, Department of Labor, whatever, that is part of the executive branch, and the executive branch isn't supposed to legislate. So these conservatives have devised this doctrine. It's very ahistorical. It's a really kind of new idea. But they've devised this doctrine that says if Congress wants to legislate, it has to do all of the legislating, and it's not allowed to hand off any of this legislative power to these administrative agencies, which again is just a recipe for no legislating at all.
So in other words, they can't say to the EPA, make sure our water's clean. They have to define it and have to down to like, there can be no lead above 0.3 microns. There can be no blankety blank above 0.3, you know, 2 microns. There cannot be, if it's still water, it cannot contain this amount of money of chemical. If it's running water, it cannot contain that. They have to predict what chemicals might be dumped in the future, because you can't say every chemical can't be present in water, because you just don't know. And you just don't know what chemicals there are. There are chemicals that Congress may never even heard of that are used in fracking, that because because there's intellectual property, you know, in terms of like, they don't have to reveal what's in there. So it basically functionally makes it impossible for Congress to carry out or for our society to carry out the agenda of clean water. Healthy anything is completely out the window, because Congress itself would have to figure out what constitutes healthy, and they're not scientists, and they don't have like a budget. There's no like science department in the basement of Capitol Hill where they can send this down and have them work on it, right? I mean, that's what the EPA functions as.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And now we need to take this and expand it across the entire government. Labor laws. Congress says prevent exploitation and overtime abuse. Non-delegation doctrine, throw that out. Financial regulations. Congress says don't let the banks rob citizens blind. Don't let them sell defective products and services. Non-delegation doctrine, courts, throw that out. Everything you can imagine, like all of the regulations that we live under in 2020, they are all suspect under this doctrine. And it is a doctrine that five sitting justices have already endorsed. And if Barrett joins them, that's game over. And it means that if Republicans take Congress in a few years and we discover some chemical that's in our cookware that's killing us and Congress doesn't pass a law to stop it, the EPA is powerless to do anything. Pretty much all of us are, because that's what the conservatives in the judiciary say.
What else do you see? I mean, we could talk about voting rights. I mean, we could if that's not enough, I mean, for me, between the Chevron deference and non-delegation, so much of what we perceive as government becomes virtually impossible. I mean, it's conceivable, right, that, you know, Congress can come out and say, we're going to pass a law against C8, and you can't use C8 in manufacturing the dishware, like you said, or cookingware. But there's no ability to react quickly, as slow as things are now, right? I mean, because when the EPA does this stuff, then they get challenged by industry lawyers. So it takes time. The Obama administration issues basically says, you know, task the EPA with focusing on this aspect of dealing with climate change. They get tied up for years by lawyers, and then 2 or 3 years later, they're about to institute it. This happened with the Clean Water Act, I think it was. Yeah. And then Trump reverses it. What else is at the top of the list in your mind? I mean, I guess voting rights would be up there as well.
Absolutely. And I think we can really wrap guns and voting together, because that's something that Amy Coney Barrett did. She wrote this really extraordinary dissent in which she argued that it was unconstitutional for the government to ban convicted felons from owning firearms. And what was most remarkable about this opinion to me was that she actually said the right to bear arms is more fundamental and protected than the right to vote. And in fact, the right to vote is conditional, and it's really conditioned on you being a good citizen. And the government can take it away if you aren't. But the right to bear arms is fundamental, and the government cannot take that away without a really good reason. And I think that forecasts how she's going to rule on these decisions, and I think it shows you why this claim that liberals are the judicial activists is so absurd, right? I mean, conservatives are the judicial activists on the Second Amendment and on gun stuff. They're the ones who are knocking down state laws and federal laws that limit gun access. Meanwhile, they are glad to uphold laws that limit access to democracy, that limit regular citizens' ability to participate in our democracy. That's exactly backwards, right? Voting is the right that preserves all other rights. If you don't have it, then we don't have a democracy anymore. That's the way that we throw the bad guys out and make policy. And so for the conservatives and for Barrett to say, well, you know, the state can take away your right to vote, but it can't take away your right to bear arms, that just seems so perverse. And it seems like a recipe, not just for gun violence, but for kind of a wind down of self-governance itself in the United States.
Let's talk about, I think, you know, we've seen Mike Lee do it quite a bit. There was a couple of themes that I saw just this morning. Lindsey Graham followed this theme, and Mike Lee did. Mike Lee also, I think, is setting the table for basically getting Americans used to the idea that these six Supreme Court justices are going to fundamentally alter the country, where he talked about, you know, tweeting out ranked democracies. I mean, I think this guy, and he did it late at night, so I suspect he's up late, I don't know, having a couple glasses of scotch, just sort of ruminating, trying out how they're going to justify the Supreme Court essentially fundamentally altering the way that we perceive our government. But today, Graham and Mike Lee both hit this idea that it's ridiculous for our opponents to say that you're going to get in there and change things, or these cases have to wind their way through. You can't go in there and just flick a switch. That's true. She can't go in there and flick a switch and undercut, if not overturn, Roe v. Wade. She can't go in there on day one and flick a switch and Obergefell is threatened, or we go back to the Lochner era. But she's 47. She's, she's substantially younger than me. She's going to be there for a long time. And so there's going to be a lot of opportunity to do this. What difference does she particularly make? Like this sixth vote.
So, you know, obviously there's currently five conservatives on the court, but Chief Justice John Roberts who is conservative, has still shown himself to be a bit of an institutionalist, right? So he will sometimes factor in the court's legitimacy and the court's prestige when making a decision, and it will lead him to kind of balk at like really far right rulings. So for instance, Roberts upheld the Affordable Care Act famously, right, in 2012. He did so again in 2015. He recently ruled to block the citizenship question that Trump was trying to add to the census. And he made it very clear that he didn't do so because he hated the question. He did it because the Trump administration lied to him. The Trump administration came into court and lied about why they wanted this question. They said it was to enforce the Voting Rights Act. Roberts said, you know, that's not true. We all know that's not true. You know, Roberts wouldn't deal with this kind of chicanery. I think Barrett would, because she is much more conservative than Roberts on pretty much every issue, even the ones where Roberts is already far to the right. And she seems to be a lot more partisan, a lot more aligned with the Republican Party. I mean, look at what she's willing to do right now, right? Participate actively in this insane power grab as millions of Americans have already voted in this election. She has shown herself to be a cynical hack. And so I think when these future cases come, like the one about the Affordable Care Act that the court will hear in November, or when you know, a corrupt administration lies to the court to try to rig the census, I think she will join the other four conservatives who don't care about institutional prestige, who are basically nihilists who follow the GOP platform. And that frightens me, because as far as we've already fallen here, we've got a lot farther to go. And Amy Coney Barrett is the one who will hold, have the power to sort of drag us down to the rock bottom.
And I just want to remind people about that census question. Roberts had no choice but to acknowledge that they had lied. There was literally like this. It was like, this is almost like movie script style. Like you would say, that's a little bit too deus ex machina. The daughter of the guy who constructed a whole plan to disenfranchise voters had literally it all on his computer. He died. She got the computer, a hard drive, and found this treasure trove of stuff that completely contradicted what the Commerce Department and the DOJ was basically telling John Roberts. And he was just basically like, you know, go back, figure out some other reason, and I'll let you do this. But this is embarrassing. Like, and that was basically it. And so people should understand that, like, this is just a question of he feels a little bit more responsibility. And I think that's why Trump is so concerned about getting a sixth vote on there in the event of an election hearing and in terms of the ACA. Tell us a little bit about this ACA. We just have a couple minutes here, but tell us the implications, because we hear about the Republicans want to protect pre-existing conditions, but this lawsuit could very theoretically within 6 months basically crash the ACA.
Yeah. So when I describe this case, people think it sounds so crazy and stupid that it can't be real, but I promise you it is. About 20 red states, as well as the Donald Trump Department of Justice, are arguing that basically when Congress zeroed out the individual mandate, so Congress in 2017, when it passed the tax cuts, it said also you don't have to pay any money if you don't have health insurance. The penalty is gone. That by doing that, it destroyed the entire law, and all of the ACA has to fall because it's all unconstitutional. Why is that? These individuals argue, and again, so crazy, but this is what they're saying, that because you do not have to pay money into the individual mandate, right? Because it's gone, there's no penalty for not having health insurance, that it is now a command. And that, you know, the Supreme Court famously upheld it as a tax, right? Because it was collecting revenue. Now that it's not collecting revenue, it is a legal command, and that makes it unconstitutional, which is really dumb, because if you don't follow it, literally nothing happens. But leave that aside. They then argue that because this part of the law is unconstitutional, all of the rest of it has to fall. Medicaid expansion, exchanges on the internet, tax subsidies, right? Protections for pre-existing conditions, the contraceptive, every single part of it has to fall because this one component has been made unconstitutional. That is a nonsensical argument. It is one that conservative judges on the lower courts have accepted. And so I don't really get why Republican senators are now claiming that this is a frivolous lawsuit with no chance of success when their president and their colleagues in red states have been backing it for years and are now taking it to the Supreme Court in a brazen attempt to do through the courts what they could not do through Congress, which is eradicate the ACA.
And let me just add to that that point about severability, right? That's the doctrine that says that is this one element of the law, which we have found to be unconstitutional, let's say, in this instance, does that doom the rest of the law or can it be separated out?
Right.
Did Congress, when they passed the law, say like this is all or nothing, and we know specifically Congress's intent here because they're the ones who zeroed it out. They did this and they kept the ACA intact. And by the way, when we say they, obviously 49 wanted to get rid of it, but 51 didn't. And so that's the way that we express they's Congress intent. They knew what they were doing in terms of like keeping the law, but just zeroing that out. So the idea that it's not severable is like that's if I was a law professor and wanted to teach judicial activism, which is sort of not really a thing, that would be it. It would be fighting the will of Congress. I mean, the only other example I can see is the way that they crashed Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act by saying like, the reason why the Senate reauthorized it because they're afraid to not reauthorize it. I mean, that's
racial entitlement is what Scalia called it. He said it was a racial entitlement and that Congress would never take it away. So the courts have to do it.
All right. We just have 2 minutes left. And this is a conversation I'm probably going to have with you again over the coming months and with others over the coming months, because like I started this conversation off, I am trying to make up for the obvious failure that I, as somebody who opines about this stuff, has not been able to get people to understand and appreciate the implications of the Supreme Court. What do you think about what the Democrats are doing now in the context of the fight that is going to happen amongst Democrats, across, you know, maybe, you know, ideological points, as to reforming the Supreme Court by expanding it?
So I may be in a minority here, but I actually think the Democrats are doing a pretty good job threading the needle. And here's why. The fight right now should not be about court expansion. Okay, the Democrats have not won. They do not have Congress. They do not have the presidency. There is right now an extreme radical nominee to the Supreme Court on the brink of confirmation. I think that all of the focus should be on her and that Democrats need to fight tooth and nail to keep her off the Supreme Court. Are they going to lose? Yes, but they need to lose right. And they need to lose in a way that makes their base so aggrieved and radicalized about what Republicans have done that they are then ready to, you know, take up the fight for court expansion and court reform as a kind of tit for tat proportional retaliation against what Republicans have done. I don't think Joe Biden should declare his position. That's not the question on the table right now. The fight is about Amy Coney Barrett, not some hypothetical future four justices who might be added to the Supreme Court. So, you know, I could finesse the messaging if I were at the DNC, but I actually think that they're doing a decent job.
I'm going to agree with 85% of what you said, and I don't have really the ability. But the only thing I would say is that they are participating in this hearing signals to the American public that at least it's somewhat normal. It doesn't matter what they say. You know, show me, don't tell me. They could show the American public that this process has been corrupted. And I'm convinced the reason why they're not, and I agree with you, I don't think Biden should say anything about it. It's perfectly fine for him to say, I'm not a fan of it. Okay, great. Good. You're not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of it either. I think it should happen later if they seat this justice. But by participating in this, they are dampening the outrage because they are under signaling how outrageous this is. And by dampening the outrage, I think that they are trying to set the table to tamp down that outrage when she is sat so that they don't have to deal with it in January. But we're going to talk more about this next time you come on. Mark Joseph Stern, folks can check you out at Slate. The stuff that you've been writing about this has been great. And like I say, I follow you on Twitter. And, most of the stuff is alarming now. So, but I appreciate it anyways.
Thanks. Glad to terrify you. That's my job.
Thanks for coming on. All right, folks, we're going to take a brief, tiny break, and we'll be back in a moment. All right, we're back. We have Senate races around the country that are taking place. I mean, if you go and you look at the, I head over to one of the polling sites and you look at the breakdown of the Senate races, you're going to see a trend. A lot of these polling places, what they do is they put the difference between the two candidates, and they will do plus, and then the name, and it will be the color. If it's red, if it's a Republican is in the lead, it's red. And if it's a Democrat in the lead, it's in blue. And if you look, just scan across it, you will see that many of those are blue, and they're turning bluer as we get close to the election. Now, they're razor thin margins. We have a lot of voter disenfranchisement, even in Texas right now. The Texas governor is excited at the fact that they only have to put one ballot box in each county. And there are counties in the state of Texas that, people don't take drives like that. Over the course of a year, they don't drive that far in parts of this country. But in Texas, you're expected to return your ballot in person. If you want to do it, you have to drive hours and hours. He's excited about that. So you cannot be sure. However, we're seeing it in places like even in North Carolina. We're seeing it in other places. Folks can check out the race in West Virginia. I haven't seen much polling. But who knows? Here's a race where I think we have a missed opportunity. I don't know if anybody could defeat Mitch McConnell, but Charles Booker, I thought, had the best shot, but voters deemed otherwise. Amy McGrath is running against Mitch McConnell. But here is a moment just to remind you of how, frankly, ghoulish Mitch McConnell is. The Senate is standing in the way right now of any type of COVID relief bill. Trump and Mnuchin want to do it. Pelosi wants to do it. The Senate, the Republicans in the Senate are standing in the way because Mitch McConnell thinks that he's going to lose control of the Senate. He thinks that Joe Biden is probably going to win the presidency. And if he does, he doesn't want to have set up any more relief for the American public because he's going to snap back into that position he took during the Obama administration, which is no help for the American people, just total obstruction. But just look at Mitch McConnell's response when Amy McGrath starts talking about providing no relief during COVID.
The House passed a bill in May, and the Senate went on vacation. I mean, you just don't do that. You negotiate. Senator, it is a national crisis. Yeah. You knew that the coronavirus wasn't going to end at the end of July. We knew this. I mean, I just think you've got to. And here's the thing. If you want to call yourself a leader.
So, Bill.
If you want to call yourself a leader, you got to get things done. And those of us that served in the Marines, we don't just point fingers at the other side. We get the job done.
I mean, I just try and imagine that. First of all, it's incredibly ghoulish to see Mitch McConnell laugh and chuckle at the idea that he didn't. And there's been actually multiple bills the Heroes Act and sort of like the Slim Heroes Act passed by the House. Senate is completely obstructing these bills, and the others don't want to provide the help to the American public. If Trump wins, maybe they'll get to it then. But if it's going to be Biden, they don't want to provide that help. I can't help but think in my head how Charles Booker would have approached that. But it is what it is. And it's not just about, you know, a leader getting stuff done. It is, there are American people. It doesn't even matter that they're American. But we have, we can only do stuff for the American people in this instance when it comes to COVID relief. There are people, millions upon millions of people suffering, and they're not doing anything about it. We will talk more about this and cover more of the Amy Coney Barrett hearings tomorrow on the program. If you are just joining us for the hour, we will say adieu. For those of you who are sticking around, I wonder if there's anybody else who finishes their show in French. Sadly, it's the only thing. It's the only French word I know. I don't even, is that, that's French, right? Adieu.
Yes, that's French.
Yeah. If you're sticking around for the fun half, folks, glad to have you. You can do that by becoming a member of the Majority Report. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you're supporting the first half of the show, and you're getting extra content every day. And frankly, you're also, some level, you know, supporting the endeavor like the AM Quickie, which we do every morning, about 6-7 minutes, headline news from a decidedly left-leaning perspective. And you can sign up for that at amquickie.com, or you can find it on your podcast servers, wherever it is. Also, do we have Nomi? Is she here? No? Hello?
Here she is.
Here she is. She's going to tell you about what's happening on the Nomi Key show in just a moment. I want to remind you also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, I should also say this. So Tim Pool, right, was on Twitter the other day talking about how, you know, lefties won't come on a show. And I said, well, I'll come on your show. And it turns out to be on a show, you need to fly to Washington, D.C. and then go into a studio, presumably, you know, one that is at least airtight or at least sound tight or whatever it is, and sit down with at least three folks in there, as far as I can tell, who are not wearing masks. I don't know how careful these guys have been in terms of COVID. I have a responsibility to myself, I guess, and to also my kids and my ex-wife, who I exposed via my kids, and the little tiny pod play group that my son is in. And so it is tough for me to do that. In addition, it's tough, you know, you do a 5-day a week show. When are you going to fly down to DC and get back in time? So for the time being, I will not be doing that. I'm debating as to whether or not, I mean, I got to try and figure out if there's a way to do it, but here he is. I recently did a thread where I said it was hard to book leftists on my podcast. I was immediately bombarded with leftists calling me out as a liar and throwing names at me. A few people publicly said they'd go on my show in response and then privately messaged me saying they wouldn't. I did a DM Tim and said I would do. And then he said, you got to come here. Claims they've never done remote interviews for In Real Life, IRL. That's the name of the show. I guess for a while they had a format where they wouldn't do interviews. It's super easy to set up doing remote interviews, obviously. But I guess the format's not going to change even for a pandemic. But here's the point. If you say that you must fly halfway across the country, a third of the way across the country, a quarter of the way across the country in the middle of a pandemic, you're going to limit who you're going to get as guests. You're going to get professional agitators. You're going to get younger people. you're going to get single people, and you're going to get people who are not as concerned about COVID because they don't believe that it's real. And that's what you're going to get. So, you know, and this is part of the thing that I have an issue with Tim, is that it's one thing to say, hey, you know, it's funny. Leftists seem to be more concerned about COVID, and so they don't come on my show in this instance. Or, you know, it seems like leftists aren't as hungry to, you know, be exposed to, and it is a massive audience he has. Massive. And that's curious to me. But to make it sound like leftists won't come on the show as if like they're afraid to go on with him, as opposed to like, I cannot make like for instance, I could say, listen, I have offered $10,000 to any conservative who will come on this show. And they're not coming on the show. And then they DM me and like, I'll come on the show. And I'm like, yes, okay, here's the deal. You got to pay me $20,000. And then after you jog here, because I like all of my people to get here with blisters on their feet. That's just why we call it Cedar's going to blister you. And then I give you the $10,000 right after I get the $20,000 check and it clears. You can see, I mean, it's obviously it's a little bit of an extreme example, but you can see what we're talking about here, right? Like it is disingenuous to do that. That, as far as I can tell, is the formula. Now, with that said, it's true. He's making enormous amounts of money. Like, I think that he probably generates more revenue on his show, if it is the case that he had 110 million of views last month. He's probably generating more revenue annually than most hosts of cable television get as a salary. In fact, I would probably say like there's few who make more money than that. So he has a massive audience. It is true. And I don't think that there's an audience there that is available to me, but I do think there's an audience there that is available, at least a portion of that, to see that perhaps maybe the information that they're getting there is a little bit less obvious than they think it is. Let's put it that way. But we'll see. Hopefully we'll have that opportunity. In the meantime, however, joining me is the host of the Nomiki show.
Okay.
Miki show? Nomiki show.
Oh, come on.
What?
This is like a shtick. Yes, hi. It's Nomiki.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Sam. How are you?
Nomiki.
You got it. There you
well,
go.
I just saw it because it came up on your Zoom thing. Who's going to be on today?
Today we have Harvey Kay. It's been a while, so we're
awesome.
I'm excited to have him on. And then we have Nando Vila and Napoleon DeLegend for our panel afterwards. So we're going to have a real good conversation about, you know, where the left is right now, what kind of fights are happening, why they're happening. I'm sure a lot of you guys are watching yesterday and. You know, it's just an important moment to stay focused. So,
yes, you and I are going to talk more about that in a moment.
YouTube.com/TheNomiKey Show right after the show.
3 p.m. And also, folks, check out The Antifada. You can find it at patreon.com/TheAntifada. Also today, where the heck is that? Oh, I can't find that. Also today, tonight is Tuesday. So, Matt, what's happening on TMBS?
Tonight, Alicia Brooks is talking to Kristen Godasi on why you have better sex under socialism. So argument for you, Sam. So you want to look forward to that one. So patreon.com/TMBS and The Michael Brooks Show on YouTube tonight.
Fantastic. I was just told by my sister that adieu is like saying goodbye forever. So I should probably be saying au revoir at the end.
Tout à l'heure. How about that?
But, tout à l'heure. You know, it's
doesn't it literally mean to like to God or something like that? Adieu?
Yeah, adieu maybe. Maybe adieu it means God. Like I'm heading home. I mean, look, it's you know, in this era, it is probably not bad to I just got an IM. Tim Pool's economics researcher. Sam Cedar's paying $10K to any conservative willing to appear on MR. Clipped and noted. So there you go. All right.
Read the fine print.
A quick break. We will say au revoir until we see you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.